We don't have to be sewing and we don't have to be cooking. I know CWA hashtag scones. But
did you have to bake scones to be invited
I can't
in?
Even make scones. So even the first batch of scones I ever made, the chooks wouldn't even eat. So I that was a big fail there.
Okay.
There's other things that...
They won't revoke your presidency.
No, there's other things that you can do.
Welcome back to Herstory. This series gets stuck into the stories of inductees to the Western Australian Women's Hall of Fame. My name's Taylor Strano. I'm with you each week as we meet some of the trailblazing women who've called WA their home. In episode 8, we meet Annette Howard. Annette, together with her family, have been mainstays in the Australian pork industry for more than two decades. She's a farmer, a scout leader, and part of the Pork Industry Training Committee. She's also busting the myth that you need to bake a good scone to be part of the Country Women's Association, joining the CWA more than 40 years ago. It's Season 2, Episode 8 of Herstory with Annette Howard. This is Her Story.
Annette Howard, and I live in Wanamal, which is about 100 k's north of Perth.
Tell me a little bit about your childhood. You grew up in New Zealand.
That's correct. We lived in New Zealand until I was 15 years old, mostly on the west coast of the South Island of New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was a pretty normal childhood, but I do remember one of the earthquakes. You know, like at school, we used to have earthquake drill. We didn't have fire drill. We had earthquake drill.
Like the duck and cover.
Yep. Get under or get out quick, yes. So that's a bit different and novel. And we had a pretty major earthquake and Dad got everybody out except himself.
Oh. Like,
yeah, he's sort of busy doing things. But yeah, we never got TV until I must have been at least 10 or 11. You know, your childhood was spent riding bikes and we lived next to the beach, exploring the beach and doing all sorts of outdoor things.
So you're one of four girls as well, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yeah, the eldest of four.
Oh, the eldest. There's something special that comes with being the eldest sibling, isn't there?
Well, yeah, you have to set all the ground rules or it becomes a bit harder.
You're also the trial kid too.
That's dead right. Yeah, you have to demonstrate why and how.
When did you move to Australia?
In 1972, we moved to Australia. Dad was working for an American mining company, and my understanding is the government at the time didn't want American mining companies in New Zealand, so we moved to Australia. And he became one of the original FIFOs, flying into Indonesia for 6 weeks and home for 2 weeks.
So where was home in Australia?
Oh, Brisbane.
Brisbane. He is kind of like the original FIFO worker. Did it change much in the family moving to Australia from New Zealand? Because you would have been in your middle of your teenagehood.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was a bit scary, but the best thing was, like, I just wanted to go to Surfers Paradise and write back to all my girlfriends I've been to Surfers Paradise, so that was pretty cool. And living in the South Island, most of our cousins lived in the North Island, so we had so many visitors in Brisbane. Mm. Lots and lots. We saw lots more relations than we'd ever seen before. No, it was very different. Obviously a lot hotter and finer.
Mm. And being a pretty close family, you moved to Brisbane, you moved to a new country essentially. Mm. And then your dad's in Indonesia for weeks at a time. What was that like?
Well, he wrote religiously, like he liked writing and he was a very good artist. So you'd get letters every week and we would have written back. And Mum just learnt to cope with four teenage daughters. Look back now and we laugh.
Mm, it's a lot of energy.
It is, yes, yeah. So Dad did mountaineering when he was in New Zealand, so I guess she'd got used to being on her own for a while or not having him around. But four teenage daughters is a bit of a challenge.
Mm. Let's move forward a little bit. You've described or identified that pig farming, which is what you do, is a 365-day-a-year, 24-hours-a-day kind of job. I want to dive into that in a moment. How did you end up becoming a pig farmer, Annette?
Oh, I married this beautiful West Australian farmer.
Tell us a bit about the story of how you met.
So I've been very involved in Girl Guides and Scouting. So one of my girlfriends went on a Kentucky tour to New Zealand. And my husband-to-be, Errol, he and two of his mates went on the same Kentucky tour. And so when Jan and Warren got married, Errol was best man and I was bridesmaid, so we met on the steps of the church.
Oh my gosh, it's like the makings of a rom-com.
A lot of people just look at us and go, oh.
Did you look across the altar at each
other? I did. We had rehearsals Friday night. I rang my girlfriend and said, I'm having the best man, you can have the usher.
That's scandalous.
Yes, so I got him. But
did he know about this?
Oh, probably after.
Okay.
It was quite interesting at the wedding because there was quite a few mature age ladies who all wanted to dance with him. So I didn't get to have much to do with him until, you know, after the wedding, about midnight.
You had to jump on the dance card early.
Well, probably had things to do then, you know, fairly specific things that bridesmaids did at weddings back then.
Did you know he was a pig farmer and lived in Australia?
He wasn't a pig farmer then. No, I knew he was from Western Australia because that's where my girlfriend moved to. So she's in Western Australia. So, no, he was a sheep and wheat farmer. So when we got married, we moved to Corrigan and we were there for 12, 18 months and it was a drought. So we looked for land that had a better rainfall and we moved to Wanamal because it's a much higher rainfall. And we were farming together for a few years and then we decided to separate. And we're on the sand plain and pig farming was a way to make a decent income. You know, it's very different to the soils from Corrigan where he was. So in 1985, we started building a piggery and we've expanded ever since. So it was from 6 sows to now we've got 22,000 pigs.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
You're still expanding.
Oh, no more.
Okay,
well,
good.
I said that last time, but our eldest son, he manages a piggery now, but he wanted to expand. So I said, I've done with it. But
did you know anything about farming or piggeries?
No, absolutely nothing about farming. However, my mum is off a farm in New Zealand that is 103 years old and my cousin's still on that farm. But no, I didn't know anything about farming and all my girlfriends said, what are you going to do? Are you going to be bored? They ran me and said, you know, are you bored yet? What are you doing? No. It was very much us together. We did it all together. And when our three boys came along, we farmed as a whole family together.
The family that farms together is the family that stays together, clearly. What is like a typical day in the peak of your piggery days? What's a typical day look like?
Okay, so when the kids were all school age, we would get up, say, 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe half past five. We'd sort out the pigs for a load of pigs. My husband would go off with the truck to drive it down to, it was Watsonia on that day, at Fremantle. I'd come home and the kids had 15 minutes to get ready and to get on the school bus and they knew that. They were super, super organised. Put them on the bus, come back, probably grab a bite to eat. Then I'd go down to the piggery and I'd feed the pigs, mate, wash out, whatever I needed to do, probably home at 12, 1 o'clock, and then I would have been involved in volunteer things. So then I would have gone off and done whatever. So, yeah.
It's a labour-intensive morning.
Oh, well, yeah. I was fitter and slightly slimmer, so it's got its benefits.
You've still got some muscles there, Annette. I can see them. That's incredible. I imagine there was lots of learning curves involved as well.
Oh, there was. So when we started, lots of farmers were pig farming and we had a local pig improvement group that met every month. So that was a fantastic source of information with lots of guest speakers. They're a very social group and they share lots of information together. So very, very lucky. There was lots of people around.
Just for folks who maybe don't know where Wanamal is, we're standing here in Mount Lawley. Can you explain to us from here how long or how far away it is?
It's probably 90 minutes. It's on the Bindoon Mora Road, so it's about 28 kilometres north of Bindoon.
Okay, so it's regional in terms of Perth. It's not the middle of the wheat belt.
No. And so Gingin is probably the shire with the most pigs in the whole of West Australia. We get sea breezes, we've got fabulous water supply, and we're close to the markets. So most pigs are grown in the Gingin Shire.
How close are you to your neighbours, proximity-wise?
3 k's away, and they've also got a piggery. Like, we live on Pig Road. No, it's not called Pig Road, but there's thousands of pigs on the road we live on.
Okay. So I can understand then the value of getting together with other people in your community. Yeah. That must be something that's really quite valued when you live out there.
So you're talking about our community or the pig community?
Well, both.
Okay. So the pig community is amazing and very supportive. And we have, I call them pig days, the industry function days, but I just call them pig days, that are very informative and lots of guest speakers. And we can talk to anybody over any concerns or you want information, you can get it straight away regarding the pig industry. And then Wanamal, the small community of Wanamal, there's probably 50 families that live there. That's an amazing community that does lots and lots of family orientated activities, like most rural communities.
I love the idea of Pig Day. I'm from an Italian family, Annette, and Pig Day means something very different in our family.
Yes. Mm. I can imagine.
That's
I know.
Why you make the sausage.
Yes.
Okay. We've talked a little bit about where Wanamal is, and you've given us some really good idea of what day-to-day life looks like for a pig farmer. Talk to me a bit about what you do in the pork industry now, because you're still, while you're not maybe out there feeding the pigs at 7 o'clock in the morning, you are still quite heavily involved.
Okay, I'm a workplace assessor in the pork industry, have my Cert 4 in training and assessment. People in the pig industry need to have a Certificate 3 in pig production, so I go onto farms and do assessing for the people that need assessing. We have Pork Industry Training Committee runs courses for Cert 3 in the pig production, and we run one course usually over 18 months, and so we need people that understand the pig industry to be able to go on farm and assess individual students. And while the pig industry has a huge biosecurity issue, if I go to another farm, I obviously haven't been in our piggery for at least 48 hours, and I come back straight away and I shower. I even have a bath mat on the car floor, and that gets washed. So I shower straight away. Everything's washed and showered. Just that the biosecurity is huge in the pork industry.
That's not surprising. Like, I'm glad to hear these measures are happening, obviously. But I feel like there's probably a lot of parts of the industry that people aren't aware of. What's some of the things that would maybe surprise people about the pork industry? It seems that it's very regulated.
Oh, hugely regulated. And that's the other thing that I do, is we have a lot of compliance. While our son runs the piggery, I do a lot of the compliance. National pollutant inventory, water monitoring. Yeah, there's a lot of compliance. So the people that work in the industry absolutely love the pigs and care for the pigs. We have 5 or 6 staff and one girl we've had working for, girl. Woman, she's been working for us for over 20 years, and they just love what they do and are generally concerned about the pigs' welfare.
When your friends were calling you when you first moved out to the farms and were saying, what are you going to do all day, have they come to recognise now, or do you think that it's become more obvious why you love what you do?
Oh, well, yeah. So a lot of these girlfriends were through Girl Guides. And so I've been married 42 years. Whenever I go to Brisbane, we catch up, and I've just come back from Brisbane. So they just absolutely blown away with what I do day to day and what I did in the pig industry. Yeah, they had no idea that farming could be so involved.
And I think a lot of people who live in the city probably don't really know the full extent of it either.
I totally agree. Yes.
You can say it. It's all right.
Everywhere you drive around Australia, there's some sort of farming. Yeah.
I think that maybe it's easy for us not to take for granted, but to forget that it truly is like the backbone of Australian industry, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's mining and that happens in Australia, but the agricultural industry and the fresh food production that happens in Australia, particularly in WA, there's so many different types that happen all up and down the coast.
Our research, you know, we all pay funds towards research, so the research often comes up with amazing things. And I know in the pork industry, we've got lots of local people that are involved in research, and at our pig industry days, we always hear what research they're doing to better the industry.
I want to come to Pig Day. Let me in on the next one. You mentioned about your girlfriends and girl guides and scouts. Tell me a bit about your involvement in the scouts.
I've been involved in the scouts for over 30 years. I was a girl guide before in Brisbane and a guide leader before I got married. And although the girl guides tried to hunt me down when I moved to Western Australia, I said, just wait till I see what sex my children are. Mm. And I had three boys. So as soon as they were old enough, I started scouting and are still there. Now, a Joey Scout leader, so that's the 5 to 8-year-olds that are just beautiful and believe anything you say. It's not that I don't tell them the truth, but if you want to make believe is
embellish.
Amazing. Yeah, embellish. Yeah. Yeah.
Why did you become a girl guide? Why did you join the girl guides when you were younger?
That's a very good question. I just did. I don't know why. It must have been what was offered when we lived in New Zealand, and it was what was offered. I can remember going to one jamboree in New Zealand, a big guide camp, and I just really liked it. And I guess I've had very inspirational leaders. So that's the answer to any volunteer organisation, is that the people who lead it, if whether they inspire you or not.
Sure, that makes total sense. I imagine coming to Australia and then continuing in Girl Guides is a beautiful way to familiarise yourself with your new community and to meet new people as well.
Yeah, it was, yeah. A common bond that you had. And you might not think it, but people from New Zealand to Queensland speak very different language. Like, there's lots of words that were... Oh, what are you talking about? And even Western Australia, there's...
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. Their port, that was their school bag. And, yeah, like just different words. And, of course, in New Zealand you have jandals, which are your thongs.
It's like culture shock.
It was a bit, yeah.
Yeah. A port is a school bag.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what the ships pull into.
Yeah.
Fremantle. Yeah. I'm unaware because I've lived here my whole life, but are there any from Western Australia?
Any what?
Any funny words that we use?
You always talk about over east.
Yeah, it's mainly because we don't actually know where over east you're all living.
Yeah.
So it's just the generalised term.
I can't think of any other words. There would have been, but I've been here 42 years.
So you're speaking the Sandgroper language now.
Just about, yes.
So scouts and girl guides, something that's been a very constant in your life,
yes,
from doing it as a young person, but also now as an adult leading. What is it that keeps you coming back and doing it?
You just need one young person to say, oh, I've never done that before. That was the best day of my life. Thank you so much. And that will inspire you to go on for another 12 months.
And that could be something as simple as...
playing in the mud, because a lot of kids aren't allowed to play in the mud. My mum won't let me do that, but you let me play in the mud. Or you let me sleep in a tent overnight. Yeah, just doing imaginative things and getting them outdoors and giving them opportunities that they wouldn't normally have.
There's something to be said about the simplicity of just playfulness. Mm. And I know that as adults that we often forget how to play. So this must be a really nice practice for you to do it with young kids, but also just for yourself, you get to play.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, yeah.
It'll keep us all young, ultimately.
Yeah. And one of the best things, like working in the piggery, when we've sold the pigs, we wash everything back to brand new before we bring the next lot of pigs in. So there's a lot of hours spent washing out. And that's when I used to plan all my cub programs and have these wonderful ideas, because you're standing there for 2 hours hosing out. Oh, we can do that and I could do that.
So inspiration strikes.
It was. And the other thing is driving, you know, an hour distance. That's a great time for self-reflection and, oh, yes, now we could add this and we could do that. You've got to use the time wisely when you're in regional areas.
Well, it sounds like you have been. In the last season of Herstory, a lot of the women were part of Zonta Club. I found this season a lot of the women are part of the CWA. That includes you. You've been a member for 42 years of the Country Women's Association.
32 for CWA. Oh,
32 years. For people who have seen the CWA pop up, maybe at a bake sale. There's a lot more to the CWA. Annette, can you tell me what is the CWA? Why are you a part of it?
I joined when I was first married. So when we moved, well, it wasn't actually Corrigan, it was Bulli. So it's a small town out of Corrigan. And the CWA was the backbone of the community. So I joined that branch, and that was where children were very, very welcome. They do whatever they want to do. I know that people relate to tea and scones or cooking, but if you don't have people that want to cook, you don't have to cook. It's whatever you want to do and how you want to help the community. And it doesn't have to be your local community. It could be over East or it could be worldwide. It's about making a difference in people's lives. So we lived there for 12 months, and then when I moved to Wanamal, I joined the Gingin branch, and then a lady, Shirley Forrester, from a station up near Meekatharra, she was living at McGumberin, so she wanted to start a branch in our area. And I said, yes, I'll be on that. So that was 1982, and we started our own branch, which I was the inaugural secretary and now president for the third or fourth time. And we made sure that children and families were very welcome and that people could come and go. She had very similar values that I had to having a CWA branch that can make a difference for people in the community.
So much like the Scouts, the thing that's kept you coming back, and president no less, is the people around you.
Yeah, yeah. It's always the fellowship. But there's lots of different things that you do. So I'm just trying to,
Prepared.
Well, semi. So one of the things that I did in 2018 is that there was a group from Western Australia who went to Timor-Leste for 10 days over there to work with Malak Timor, which was an NGO. Mm-hmm. And there was two doctors from Bajangara. And so we work with them to do things in East Timor. And there was tons and tons of clothing taken over, you know, in our 20 kilos of the suitcase that we were allowed to have. Sporting equipment, baby's clothes, two food processors, drills, all sorts of things taken over so we could make a difference over there. That was a pretty amazing opportunity.
That's incredible, from Bajangara to East Timor.
Yeah. The lady that organised it lived in Bajangara, so she had contacts, but she did three trips over there with groups of CWA women and their husbands.
When you were first married, Annette, did you ever imagine this is, like, where you would end up when you
No.
first joined the CWA?
No, no. And the opportunities I've had have been amazing. So I worked in photography before I was married, but I've just worked on the farm since. And it was about 1998 when they were looking for workplace assessors, so I did the training then. And the CWA have training programs, and so I volunteered to be part of the CWA training program, which is about how to run meetings effectively, how to inspire people to enjoy CWA and things that relate to CWA members. So I've just been in the right place at the right time. Well, that's how I feel. One of the other opportunities I had, there was a South Pacific area conference over here and lots of ladies from Tonga and Papua New Guinea, and they went up to Durian for 3 days, and I was invited to go up there and help present, and I was just blown away that they asked me. That was just an amazing opportunity and a real eye-opener to how third world countries cope and live.
Mm. Yeah. It's an incredible opportunity. I think it's less right place, right time, and more just right person, though. And I know that you won't say that, but I'll say it. For women who are listening and maybe do live regionally or have a local CWA branch, they've thought about, maybe they weren't quite sure, what would you say to them about maybe taking the leap and joining a CWA branch?
Oh, go along and go along and join in. And it's about what you want out of it and how you can make that happen. And so if you all like gardening, we'll do things about gardening. We don't have to be sowing and we don't have to be cooking. I know CWA hashtag scones. But
did you have to bake scones to be invited?
I can't
in?
Even make scones. So even the first batch of scones I ever made, the chooks wouldn't even eat. So I that was a big fail there.
Okay.
There's other things.
They won't revoke your presidency.
No, there's other things that you can do. In Gingin, we work with the school chaplain a lot. There's a big need there. You know, it's about identifying what there is in your local community and then seeing how you can help those people.
And you work a lot. You do a lot of things. And I know that a lot of them are for the love of the people around you. But what is it that gets you out of bed every morning and go, yes, I'm ready to take on the pigs and the CWA and my children and grandchildren? Like, what is it that gets you up and you ready to go for that?
Yeah, good question.
Coffee.
No. I don't have a coffee till morning tea. It's not the coffee
that I... Oh, and you've got, like, you exercise restraint as well. How do you do it?
I just think, no, I won't have my coffee till morning tea so I can sit down and enjoy it instead of rushing around first thing in the morning. I suppose I've done it for so long. I obviously enjoy doing it, and I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy doing it. And it must have... I'm always up for a challenge.
One of the other things that I wanted to touch on is the Northern Valley News. Tell us about your local newspaper.
Okay, so the Northern Valley News is a local newspaper produced locally, and it comes out once a month, and it is one of the best local newspapers around. So when they first started, I've always been interested in photography. Dad, we had dark rooms, so I've processed photos since I was 12 and a bit anal about the right sort of photo.
Wow.
And I enjoy writing articles for the paper. I don't think that volunteer groups promote themselves enough in the right context to get people to join them. So I've been just writing, sending in photos and writing articles as long as the Northern Valley News has been going, and that's probably, I'm going to say 8 to 10 years.
Wow.
A long time. Everyone talks about it, and it's a feel-good newspaper. It's very positive. The distribution is from Bullsbrook up to Durian Bay. Three different shires, local governments, so there's a lot of information. That's an amazing job. And when I say, I write for, do stuff for the local newspaper, they all look at you because local newspapers are not as popular or as well supported. But this one is an amazing local newspaper.
There's value in the community there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
It's interesting. The third episode of this podcast was with a woman called Marg Agnew, who lives in the state southwest. And she's also a farmer. She is actually one of the people that first established farmland in the south of WA. And she is part of the Rural Regional Remote Women's Network of WA. So, again, there's something to be said about you women who farm and write for newspapers or newsletters with the aim of connecting your own community. It just goes to show, like, how important community is when you don't live in the middle of the city.
Mm. Oh, hugely important. Yeah.
Talk to me a bit about your family, Annette. You've got grandchildren.
Yes.
Do they also get around the farm?
We've got three sons. The eldest one, Brendan, manages the piggery, and he's got three boys. So he lives on the farm, and their house is probably only 150 metres away.
So Nana's always coming over?
Bar's
always coming
bar.
Over?
Well, they're always over at my place. Yes, come and visit me a lot. So the eldest grandchild, I had the Green Sheep book, and that's what he liked, and so that's how I got the name Bar, from the Green Sheep. So, but they live just next door, and then we've got, that's three boys, twin granddaughters, and a 12-month-old boy in Mora, so that's only 65 k's away. And another granddaughter over at Wongan Hill. So they're all really close. So I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah. It's amazing that your whole family still, like, they don't all live in the same community, but you all still live quite regionally.
Yeah, they're all involved in the rural community. One works for CBH flat out at the moment. Mm-hmm. And sure. one is a salesperson for Macintosh's. So he's been really, really busy as well.
Wow.
And our daughter-in-law is a school teacher up at Mora. So I did a lot of babysitting.
I can imagine.
Last year.
We're going to wrap up soon. I won't take too much more of your time. I do want to talk, though, a little bit more specifically about volunteering. It has been such an important through line in your life, clearly, from all the adventures that you've told us about. Why do you keep volunteering, and why do you think people should volunteer?
So why do I volunteer? Well, I enjoy helping other people, but at the same time, I get great satisfaction out of being part of the community and doing things. There's less and less people volunteering, but that... If I didn't do it, no, there would be other people, but I think we need to be showing the next generation that it's not as hard as it is, that you can all make a difference in small ways. So when we moved to Wanamal, it was what you did. It was how you met people and built connections for your social life, for your everything. I can remember one function. We put three kids in the car and drove to Perth and filled the boot up with all the things we needed for catering. The kids would have all been pre-primary, primary. Came back, did all the catering, rang the function and thought, oh, well, that was good. Yeah. So it would be social first, but seeing the people involved in the community.
Everybody gets something different out of volunteering, and social is absolutely the one that is first and foremost for a lot of people. It's sometimes the only reason people are able to volunteer. Yeah. But you're right, the satisfaction of being able to help your community, and also the little slice of pride that you get when you see other people benefit from that too.
And so one of my things has always been, if you're not happy, don't complain, do something about it. So some of the things you might have started off because you think that, and the newspaper's probably one that a lot of information could be better and more engaging.
Mm.
So let's do something about it.
Be the change, Annette.
Yeah.
Be the change.
always. Scouting and CWA have changed so much over the years. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Yeah. You were inducted to the West Australian Women's Hall of Fame in the year 2012, the second year it was running. What was it like getting the call to say, hi, Annette Howard, we would love to induct you. You don't know who we are. We'd love to induct you to the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
So it was the year of the farmer, and I was working very closely with the CWA state president, Maggie Donaldson. Maggie had said to me, could she have some information? So, yes. So I gave her some information, but then it was a huge shock when it actually said, yes, this is what we're going to do. They're going to induct you. That was, it was quite unbelievable, because I don't think I do anything different to a lot of other people. So,
you know, I'm sure that that's not the case. But even if it were, it's important to have people in that community when there are so many women in farming.
Oh,
It is important to highlight, you know, at least one, so other people not in that community can see that it's happening.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Today you've taught me so much about pig farming. I feel like I am not a card-carrying member, but I'm a little bit wiser to the matter. Before we let you go, Annette, final question for you. What does farm life look like for you these days?
Well, we still live on the farm. Like I said, I do a lot of the compliance stuff in the piggery. We've got a stud Speckle Park cattle, which is my husband Errol and Brendan's passion, but we have annual bull sales, so that's an awful lot of work. So it's mostly where I'm needed at the time or what's going on. Transport person, you know, cook, all the other things that
Babysitter. And has your scone recipe improved?
No, my scone hasn't, but I can do a mean sponge, but okay. But definitely, no, I never volunteer to do scones.
I like sponge better anyway. Annette Howard, thank you very much for being part of her story.
Thank you.
Thanks to Annette Howard and all the women at the West Australian Women's Hall of Fame. And thanks to the incredible women who make Her Story happen. Our executive producer is Danae Gibson. Sophie Minisale and Madeline Lombardi are our assistant producers. Emily Jane Reed is our production assistant. Our theme music is an original composition from Annika Moses with artwork from Peter Roebuck. Herstory is an RTRFM podcast series about women in the Western Australian Women's Hall of Fame. This podcast is produced on Whadjuk Noongarrbuja. RTRFM acknowledges and pays respects to the Aboriginal elders of this land, past and present. These lands were never ceded. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. My name's Taylor Strano. Join us next week when we meet the woman who set out to shake up the education sector and how we teach in schools.
I talk with my hands, but nobody can
see
that.
No, I get it. I'm Italian. That's what we do. It's fine. As long as we don't whack the microphone, it's okay.
From UFO sightings to abandoned theme parks and tank rampages across the CBD, Planet Perth is your guide to the weird, wacky and unexplained history of our eccentric city. Planet Perth. Stream now on iTunes, Spotify and rtrfm.com.au.